Tune to Truth News Radio Australia on the 18th of September 2010. Welcome to the show. Today I'm bringing you a very special interview with a person from Canada. Sonia from the Truth of Girls is joining us in about 20 minutes after I run through some news and headlines. And I was on Sonia's show in Canada last week, and we're doing a swap. She's coming on Truth News today. We're going to talk about the things that kind of interest us. I'll ask her a few questions about what the truth movement and various movements of truth and justice are uncovering in Canada. Very similar patterns to what we see in Australia, I'm sure. So please stand by, and I hope you have a really enjoyable experience listening to our show today. Okay, starting with the top headlines from the Truth News feed. Just looking here at some of our top stories, we have the Tea Party comes to Australia. Now, I don't know a lot about this, and I suspect strongly that this is just one of those false, phony opposition groups that is set up to try to, from the people who basically manipulate and control, these types of groups are excellent because they act as a honeypot. And they draw people in, and they also provide something that you can manipulate. And, I mean, the strongest indication that I can give you that the Tea Party in America is also a controlled opposition is that Sarah Palin is fronting it. And they had Glenn Beck, who's a news anchor, actually speaking, on behalf of the group. So these type of people, I mean, Glenn Beck is renowned for being an extremely aggressive talk host and extremely erratic. And I think the fact that Glenn Beck has teamed up with Sarah Palin is a strong indication that this is just a completely phony front. Although I do not doubt that many of the people involved in this movement are genuine. Many of them are looking for change. Many of them have very real reasons for why they joined the movement. And there is a great dissatisfaction with excessive government interference, excessive taxation. So it's one of those complex things. I'll just quickly read you the story here, which was published in The Australian yesterday. Tea Party comes to Australia. An anti-tax, anti-government Tea Party has set up shop in Australia, inspired by the US-based movement that has turned the Republican Party upside down. The Australian Tea Party, an acronym for Taxed Enough Already, will be targeting pre-selections across the country and heavily promotes its links to our friends in the United States. Anyway, I'll just leave you to explore that particular story. Now, back to the one of our old favourite topics here, the internet censorship question. Stephen Conroy has made another public statement, Stephen Conroy being the Minister for Communications in Australia, and I'm just waiting for that page to load. It's being a bit sluggish. Stephen Conroy has announced that there will be no conscience vote on the filter, and this is quite an outrageous position to take. And I'll just read to you here the article which was published in ZDNet. In an interview for the ABC's PM program yesterday, Communications Minister Stephen Conroy said that there would be no conscience vote on the government's proposed mandatory internet filter. Conscience votes go to matters to do with life and death in the Labour Party, Conroy said. The minister said that the filter debate was not about censorship, rather it centred around refused classification material. I'm not sure that the censorship claim stacks up. This is about classification systems. At the moment in Australia, there is no conscience vote on refused classification for movies, TV, DVDs or bookstores, the minister said. Conroy then called on the newly installed shadow minister, Malcolm Turnbull, to justify his position on the filter to families concerned about child pornography. According to the latest information I have here from the Australian Communications and Media Authority, there are 430 child pornography sites on the World Wide Web that are accessible to anyone. Now, I'll just elaborate here on some of the details for those that aren't familiar with the debate. The Australian people are almost completely against any form of direct internet censorship. Massive numbers of people have responded to polls. There are massive Facebook groups. Every expression from the public that's been done through any form of polling or media has shown that we do not want an internet filter. Now, the filter that the government wants to bring in is a mandatory one with certain optional features that you can switch on or switch off. So it's going to supposedly block the really nasty stuff, which is the 400 or so child pornography sites and other potential sites that we don't know about, as well as things that you could choose to block. So you might actually want to block all pornography sites, and you could use the features of the system to do that. That would be a user-driven option. But the main problem with the internet filter, from a civil liberties point of view, from a basic common sense point of view as well, is that it's by government mandate to be installed in the servers of all internet providers. So it's not actually something that you can control at your end. It's something that they control at their end. And some of the watered down proposals would be that the ones that the Greens have proposed, including that the filter should be completely switchable from the end user's perspective, but it would still be centralized. So in other words, some political people have actually said that the filter should be able to be switched off at your end. But again, the problem with it is that it is to be installed in a centralized mode on the ISP servers, and the government is going to mandate that all ISPs must do this. Now, there is a basic principle that Stephen Conroy is abusing when he talks about refused classification material and saying that the internet filter is going to be no different to that. I first want to point out that our current system of classifications is by no means perfect or even good. Okay, it's clunky. It allows vast amounts of quite violent material to get through anyway. I mean, if you go down to the video store, right, and just have a look at what's in there, you'll see that there's heaps of stuff that's not even R-rated, that's extremely unpleasant, extremely violent. And, of course, there is the R-rated material, but, I mean, it's so easy for kids to get access to that anyway that it doesn't really provide much of a buffer. And so films that have been regarded as some great, you know, highly critically acclaimed films have gone under the hammer of this film censorship board due to the fact that, you know, the decision-making process there can be stacked in the favour of certain things and against other things. And we've discussed this on Truth News before. I mean, you know, a film that's regarded as one of the great movies of the 20th century, Pasolini's Salo, was banned here for 20 years. And, it, you know, I finally went and had a look at it and I compared it to other films that are not banned, you know, say Hostel or some of these extreme horror slasher flicks. And, yeah, it's much, much less violent, much less violent. I mean, still, it was a scary, horrible movie. I mean, psychologically disturbing. Can you see, it's an arbitrary system when they decide that they're going to censor. And so to use that even as a basis for saying that we have a working functional system that we're just going to extend is completely preposterous. And I really do think it has to be tackled on that level. You can't just say, oh, well, yeah, the reviews classification system is working really well. We'll just extend that. But then there's another level to it. Because the way in which Stephen Conroy is framing this is to propose that a web user interaction is kind of like a walking into a shop or going to a movie theater. Like when you sit down in front of your computer to look at a website, he's actually framing that as equivalent to you walking into a shop. Okay, because that's the way he's described it in various interviews, is that, you know, that the classification system now bans certain things from being distributed in bookstores, you know, newsagents, or shown in movie theaters. So he's saying that sitting down in front of your computer is like going into a public space, even though you're just sitting there privately having this one-to-one communication between you and some data that's stored on a web server somewhere. Now, if he can get away with that argument, if we let him get away with that argument, then what is to stop the government wanting to do the same thing with our phone calls? Have a think about that, ladies and gentlemen. What is to stop the government wanting to do the same thing with our phone calls? In other words, if the person you're calling turns out is on a blacklist because they're known to talk about naughty stuff, right? In the middle of your conversation, suddenly you could be cut off because that person is actually on the blacklist, or the call might not even go through. It's absolutely conceivable, absolutely plausible that such a thing would be done based on the same logic. So it has to be opposed. We have to go to the streets. We have to go to the trenches. We have to fight this tooth and nail. We must not allow this system to come in. And I do hope that everyone listening realizes that if they start to ramp up the rhetoric on this, and it looks like they are, we are going to have to en masse get out on the street. And it's just not going to be good enough to, you know, listen to this show, you know, sort of have your own private thoughts. You're going to have to get out on the street. So let's just get ready for that. I do believe that it's coming. I'm not sure whether it's going to come within this term of the government or not. I do think that whether it's Liberal or Labor that ultimately has government in a couple of years, they're both going to try and get it through. Malcolm Turnbull is opposing it at present, but the opposition to it has always been understated, and they haven't really made clear whether they uphold the civil liberties aspects of this argument. So stand by for further information on that. Righto. Now we'll just move on here to the next deeply disturbing story from this week. The headline here from our Twitter feed: fascist corporate elites pressure Australian government to adopt a tyrannical carbon tax. Yes, this is the next deeply disturbing development, which kind of dovetails nicely with the story we just covered, in that here is another case of a policy which we thought was dead and buried, suddenly coming back to life again, like one of those zombies in a really bad B-grade movie. The story here from Fairfax, and there were two headline stories, 2 days in a row, front page of the newspaper, top headline stories, basically announcing that businesses are pressuring the government to adopt a carbon tax. So this article is titled "Big Business Backs to Push Carbon." And I'm just going to actually play a clip here from the Fairfax news story.
The message was clear enough in the last week of the election campaign.
There will be no carbon tax under the government I lead.
Now things are not so certain.
I just think the rule-in, rule-out games are a little bit silly.
The hung parliament is the game changer, and now a call for a carbon tax from an unexpected source.
BHP Billiton acknowledges that the mainstream science is correct.
The world's biggest mining company says a global carbon tax is coming.
When it does come, Australia will have needed to act ahead of it coming in order to maintain its competitiveness.
The opposition says to put on a carbon tax ahead of the rest of the world would kill our exports.
I reject it. I completely reject it.
But the Greens say entrenched positions are having to shift.
We are in a different period of government. No one has all the power.
The Greens and the government last night began talks on a new parliamentary committee on how carbon should be priced. Coalition MPs won't take part. Tony Abbott says on the fundamental question, the committee's already made up its mind. Hugh Rimmington, 10 News.
There we have it. The government is backtracking on the promises that were made that the carbon climate change legislation was definitely not coming in this term. And here's something I find quite bizarre about this. Is that they've said, well, we can't rule it out now because the government doesn't have a strong position, you know, because of the hung parliament. But we were told that any controversial legislation was likely to get knocked back for the same reason. This is an extremely controversial legislation. There is massive opposition to it from a huge number of people around the country. So why would it be more likely that this is actually going to come through in a situation where we have a hung parliament? It should be less likely to come through. So there is something extremely duplicitous in the way Julia Gillard is framing that. And the other thing that's extremely disturbing about this is that we have 2 days in a row articles from one of the country's top newspapers announcing that big business, first of all it was BHP, then it was just businesses generally, are pressuring the government to adopt a carbon tax. And there's just so many things about that that are wrong. It's hard to know where to begin. But let me just try by saying, firstly, it is utterly reprehensible of the newspaper to publish that story and to make it a headline story, to make it the top story, because it's clearly a propaganda message. I mean, who cares what business thinks about something like that? Do businesses run the country? Is that appears to be the underlying message, is that businesses, like big businesses, I'm not talking about your corner store, I'm not talking about your ma and pa small business, I'm talking about mega global corporations. So they run the country, do they now? And that seems to be the message, because we're now in a hung parliament, so neither party has sway, so the corporates can just come in and say what they want. Is that the message? It's just so weird and so chilling to see this. And, of course, to see the corporate media used as the arm of this to ram it through. It is completely anti-democratic. It is completely fascist. It is completely totalitarian. Just observe what is going on in the news. Observe how they are using the media and how they are using their force through power and control and money now to just bully and to almost just throw off any semblance of democracy now. It's just gloves are off. It's New World Order, fascist bullying all the way now. That appears to be the tactic. So we really do need to, again, this is another similar case to the previous story I was covering. If this goes ahead, and it looks like it's going ahead, we have to mobilize people power. We've got to get millions of people out. So that is an extremely important development that we will keep you advised of. Okay, just moving along with a few more stories here before we move to our second segment. An interesting piece of scientific news about sunspots, which I think is really worth mentioning here. National Solar Observatory predicts a further reduction in sunspots with dramatic implications for global temperature. And this is quite startling, really, when you consider the other rhetoric that's going on at the same time. The amount of sunspots has decreased significantly. The new sunspot cycle has already begun. There's an 11-year cycle of solar activity, and we reached the sort of the bottom end of the cycle a while ago, and the sunspot cycle is now steaming up to reach another peak in a couple of years. But its peak is going to be very low. And I'll just read you a quick excerpt from an article here by Lawrence Solomon. 2 years ago, William Livingston and Matthew Penn of the National Solar Observatory in Tucson, in a controversial paper that contradicted conventional wisdom and upset global warming theorists, predicted that sunspots could more or less disappear after 2015, possibly indicating the onset of another little ice age. As they stated then, the occurrence of prolonged periods with no sunspots is important to climate studies since the Maunder minimum was shown to correspond with the reduced average global temperatures on the Earth. The Maunder minimum lasted for approximately 70 years, from about 1645 to 1715, and was marked by bitter cold, widespread crop failures, and severe human privation. They concluded their 2008 paper by noting, finally, observations of this type during the onset of the next sunspot cycle will be critical in determining if the observed trends continue. So that's a really interesting development, which looks to me strongly indicating that we are heading for a cooling phase. And how this is going to pan into the increased hysteria about warming, I do not know. We seem to be moving into an era of increased insanity as well. So we'll just keep our eye on that story. Bill Gates suggests elderly patients should be killed and healthcare money spent elsewhere. This is an interesting case, just another example of where the billionaires club kind of wants to take the world in terms of their view of good outcomes. You know, Bill Gates belongs to this group of extremely wealthy people who are always carrying on about how we've got to reduce the global population and save the environment and you know, vaccinate everyone in Africa and, you know, get everyone on the anti-AIDS medications and make sure they all use condoms and, you know, just all these things. And, of course, he's also responsible for some technology that apparently can sterilize men by aiming ultrasound at their testicles. It's kind of an obsession, you know, of the super elites, I think, because possibly because when you have that much money, you go a bit cuckoo and you can't think of anything to do once you've explored all your obsessions and perversions. And you basically have to think of you kind of want to take the whole world as your art form, you know, to sculpt it and mold it in whatever ways you think would be interesting. And so you start to think of entire continents, you know, how we can reshape populations and change the way everything works. You know, it's understandable. I mean, you know, it's just that's the way the human psyche works. You take an average person, give him $1 billion and you know, next thing you know, he's talking about, you know, just the most bizarre things. And it was true of like ancient emperors, you know, I'm sure we've heard stories of the Roman emperors, all of their bizarre things that they did. And, you know, now it's quite similar with some of these crazy billionaires. But in this interview, and I'll see if I can just get it up here. Bill Gates is actually proposing that people who are in hospitals and facilities who are over a certain age, that we shouldn't waste money taking care of them, because it's actually, you know, that money could be better allocated, say, training teachers. And I'll just quickly play this for you.
The proportion of GDP that goes to healthcare, is that over-allocated?
Well, the U.S. spends 17% of GDP on healthcare, and you drop down to number two, which is Switzerland at 12%. And so you say, well, what do we get for that? Well, we get nothing. The health outcomes, which are complicated to compare, but the health outcomes are basically slightly worse, both in terms of averages and the inequity. Our bottom quartile is very ugly compared to all other rich countries' bottom quartile. Our upper quartile is somewhat better, but that's how you get the inequity. So we're spending at a huge rate, which if it wasn't increasing faster than inflation, it's increasing as a percentage of the economy, then okay, you can probably afford it. But as it continues to grow, it squeezes, unless people say, yes, I would like to be taxed a lot more. And most states have these super majorities that are required to do that, and you know, it's not likely, and it's not clearly a good thing either. But as long as you're dealing with a finite amount, as the medical cost goes up, and that shows up both in state budgets as so-called state Medicaid spending, and it shows up in the federal budget as Medicare, and their part of Medicaid, it squeezes out everything else. So right now what you see is it's squeezing higher education. You're raising tuitions at the University of California as rapidly as they can, and so the access that used to be available to the middle class or whatever is just rapidly going away. That's a trade-off society is making because of very, very high medical costs and a lack of willingness to say, you know, is spending $1 million on that last 3 months of life for that patient, would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and to make that trade-off in medical costs? But that's called the death panel, and you're not supposed to have that discussion. So you, of course,
well,
we're making...
That's an interesting thing you just said, which is just the last 3 months in life for one person or something, because we haven't had a discussion of how to allocate that money, it means we lay off 3 teachers to do so. I mean, in other words, we haven't had this type of allocation.
We're making that trade-off because of huge medical costs that are not examined to see which ones actually have no benefit whatsoever. And because of pension generosity, we will be laying off over 100,000 teachers.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. So it's quite clear. The man's insane. He never really was very smart, I don't think, to start off with. And he obviously was shrewd and ruthless enough as a businessman to amass a fortune, but Microsoft has really not been a leader in anything important in terms of technological development. They've just basically been a monopolizer and a controller and a blocker. So let's hope that some of these eugenics type compulsory euthanasia is actually applied to Bill. Next time, you know, maybe when he gets a bit older. So look, I'm just going to leave it there. We're about to break, and we're going to be having our interview with Sonia from the Truther Girls shortly. So please stand by. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. And it is now my extreme pleasure to welcome to the show Sonia from Canada. Sonia, the Truther Girls, an amazing show and YouTube channel that covers information and gives a kind of a humorous angle to it often, but also quite serious in many cases. Really great to have you aboard the show. Welcome, Sonia.
Well, thank you so much, Gerard. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great. It's great to have you. I was on your show last week. That was fun. And that was actually the day of September 11, pretty important day for a lot of people. We had some interesting group gathered here at the War Memorial, a pretty small group, but we made our statement, we recorded it, and people all around the world, of course, in the 9/11 truth movement have been doing that. And you're pretty much on board with all that, Sonia, and you're a pretty dyed-in-the-wool truther by the sound of things.
Well, sure. I mean, how can anybody who's looked at the evidence, who's looked into 9/11, not know that it was some kind of a controlled demolition? I mean, that's just so obvious. And then the implications for that are so serious that once you just look at the collapse of Building 7 and ask yourself, what's going on here? And why is the government lying to us? And then it basically leads you down the rabbit hole. So 9/11 is a really key thing because that was so in our face and that was so serious that they would actually kill 3,000 people to bring in their totalitarian globalist regime in full force with the police state, with the American Patriot Act and Homeland Security, that they would go to those lengths. Like, that tells you something about these people are serious about this.
So true.
This is serious business to them. So that's something that really wakes people up. So 9/11 has always been really important to me. And the other thing that I tend to get into, mostly because my background was in sort of not the medical field itself, but I was a medical transcriptionist and a medical secretary, like a medical office assistant. And I worked in a genetics lab, assisting the doctor with things. So I do home care now, but I kind of always had a fairly good understanding of things that had to do with medicine. So I started really looking a lot into the vaccines. And that's a really big part of this too, the vaccines and the food. I mean, you call them soft kill weapons, but they are weapons. So you have 9/11, which was like a linchpin, and then you have these ongoing soft kill weapons, our medicines, our vaccines, and our foods. So those are some topics that I look into a lot.
Great.
I think they're really important. Because they're actually things you can do something about. Because you can refuse vaccines at this point. Sometimes you may have to lose your job for it, but you can still do that.
Sure. But, if Bill Gates gets his way, they'll be introducing vaccines through mosquitoes. I don't know if you come across that story, but they were going to get mosquitoes to transmit vaccines.
Is it the malaria vaccine they have with the mosquito? Because they've done a few things with mosquitoes. One thing they did was genetically engineer a mosquito that cannot carry malaria. So it's the mosquito that's kind of vaccinated through genetic engineering. That's one thing that they've done.
Yeah, so, yeah. There's actually another program where they're actually talking about using mosquitoes to transmit vaccines. I'm pretty sure it's one of the ones that's funded by Bill Gates. He tends to fund some of the more wacky ideas out there, you know what I mean?
Well, look, if they use the mosquito to transmit a vaccine, what it is, it's the vaccines we get injected, they don't work very well, by the way, in case you didn't know, which you probably do, but they produce like a temporary immunity because you take a virus and you either attenuate it, which means weaken it, or you kill it. And it's kind of really a homeopathic approach that you give a very small quantity of it and then the body recognizes it and then produces immunity. But we know now that the immunity at best is very temporary. It doesn't even produce immunity in everyone. In some cases, maybe not even in most people, like with the flu shots, you might have, they say 90% efficacy. That means by antibody titers, 90% achieved the antibody titers. But the antibody titers are not reliable because that's what you call efficacy, but then the effectiveness in terms of actually preventing flu may be only 35% at the most, and it may be very temporary. But so that's a regular vaccine, and it's a chemical cocktail with everything from MSG in it and, you know, foreign animal protein, sometimes neoplastic human cell lines, detergent, and all kinds of stuff, mercury, aluminum. So those are just really toxic chemical cocktails. So it's not logical to think that injecting yourself with neurotoxins and excitotoxins and foreign animal proteins, which are known to cause autoimmunity when you inject them into your body, that this would somehow make you healthier. You know, that's just pretty crazy, but somehow they've managed to get us to accept that all this time, but although now we're waking up. But with the mosquito is not going to contain mercury and aluminum and MSG and, you know, antifreeze and all these things. But what it would probably contain is a form, maybe the mosquito has some form of malaria in it that's very weakened, so you get exposed to a weak form of malaria. I'm not sure how it would work. And then that would prevent you from getting the regular malaria. But what I saw with mosquitoes that was more interesting was genetically engineering the mosquito so that it cannot transmit malaria.
Okay.
So, yeah. You know, they have a few things they're working on with that. But even that, you know, why would you want to mess with that? Who knows what the unforeseen consequences would be of releasing a genetically modified insect into the wild? Maybe
sure.
It's not going to transmit malaria, but it'll transmit something worse. Who knows?
Sure. And, you know, look, when we get back to these questions about, you know, wanting to prevent illness, I mean, malaria is a pretty serious one. And, you know, it's been shown that the best way to get rid of malaria is to get rid of standing water, because that's really where the mosquitoes breed. And, you know, countries have eradicated it by improving
that's
living
true.
Conditions generally, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
But when we, you know, when we talk about things like the flu, I don't want to be prevented from getting the flu. I mean, I know that I'm going to get the flu occasionally, right? And especially when I'm under stress, and, you know, especially kind of we're at the end of winter here now, and like this is a really common time of year for people to get sick, right? Because it's like you've been working all year, it's been cold, you're tired, and the stress builds up, and you're going to get sick, right? It's just a normal thing. And why would you want to prevent that with some chemical thing that somehow just sort of, you know, treating your body like it's like a robot or something? You actually need to get the flu every now and then, because that's actually your body dealing with all of that buildup of stress and toxicity that's going to, you know, you're going to have that rest. You're going to lie down for a few days. You're going to just, you know, you're not going to go out. You're not going to drink alcohol or, you know, do things that are going to put drugs into you. You're just going to relax and you're going to get better, and then you're going to feel great again. And to say that that's some terrible thing that we have to prevent, as if that's some terrible consequence, is just preposterous. I mean, you know, even if you're an older person, you know, you're going to get flus too. You know, they sort of they're treating the flu as if it's some terrible life-threatening
yeah.
condition.
Well, the flu, for most people, it's not really that different than a cold.
Other yeah.
than that, you're more likely to have fever and what they call prostration, which is where you just can't get up, you know, and you just feel pretty crappy. But, you know, you have a good point. Why would we want to avoid disease in the first place? Because disease also serves a purpose. But as for the flu, it's not so much because you've been working hard and all that. Actually, the flu is related very strongly to absence of sunlight. Sunlight kills flu virus on surfaces, you know.
Yeah.
So when there's less sunlight, the virus lives better. But also, when you are exposed to sunlight or you take a vitamin D supplement and your vitamin D levels are high enough, you will naturally be resistant to flu infection. But that doesn't mean that you won't acquire immunity, that you won't boost your immunity naturally by being exposed to it. Because in a pandemic, you might have 10, or an epidemic might have 10 or 15% of the population in a flu season. Usually it's like between 5 and 15% that would actually get the flu, influenza, not just some flu-like illness.
Yeah.
But up to 50% of people will develop immunity to the flu without having gotten sick. See, that's what people don't realize, that you can develop immunity to the flu virus that's there that season without getting sick. you can do that if you keep your immune system healthy, well, with, you know, good nutrition and getting adequate rest and all those things, but especially vitamin D. That's one thing. It can be prevented. And two, the flu, getting the flu serves a purpose because it boosts your immunity for maybe decades. If you get natural immunity, when you take a vaccine, you have a very temporary immunity. It's only about 6 months at best.
Right, right.
And what it's been shown in Canadian studies on 4 million people, that people who receive a flu vaccine 1 year are actually more susceptible to flu the next year and will get worse case because they didn't boost that long-term natural whole immunity. So it's like you're dodging that bullet that year, but you're going to get a whole, you know, you're going to take a bigger hit in the long run if you do that. It doesn't protect anybody. And that's probably why all the studies, like from the Cochrane Review, they did a review on 40 years worth of flu shot studies, and they found that it didn't prevent hospitalization or death. And like the Mayo Clinic did a study on asthmatic children. They followed them for 3 years, and they found that actually in the long term, the children who were been vaccinated for flu were more likely to be hospitalized, probably because it undermines your immune system in the sense that you're not getting that natural long-term immunity. But disease in general can serve a function also in your body. Back in, I think it was in the 1500s or 1600s, they knew even back then that fighting an infection, this is a really amazing thing, that when your body fights an infection, it also cleans up your whole body and it mops up stuff like cancerous cells that are developing. And back then, if somebody had cancer, the doctors would send them to get a case of gonorrhea or something. And in fighting that infection, they would also fight off the cancer. So
right.
Disease serves a purpose even to strengthen our immune system. Maybe that's where it comes from. That saying comes from, what doesn't kill you will make you stronger. Like the childhood illnesses, they not only will prevent you from getting the illness later, but they've been shown to lower like the measles and the mumps. They knew even as far back as the 50s and 60s that they lowered your risk of certain cancers down the road. So it really strengthens your immune system to get these diseases in childhood and even to get the flu from time to time. Although you can, like I say, you can prevent getting real severe symptoms if you take your vitamin D. But for old people, they always say old people are more at risk. Well, it may not be because they're old necessarily. It may have more to do with the fact that they're indoors and they're vitamin D deficient.
Sure.
For kids who have disabilities, they tend to be indoors, and
yeah, and that's a huge problem.
Vitamin D deficient.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. And I mean, I can, like, I haven't been seriously ill for many years. Like I get it, you know, feel a bit run down every now and then, and I take a few days off, right? But I'm not really sick, you know what I mean? Like, but I still like to have a day off when I'm not feeling that great. Now, there's so many different issues here we can talk about. I just wanted to point out that this concept of productivity, you know, like in the workplace, and they talk about, you know, we must, you know, people having too many sick days is losing productivity, and we've got to, you know, and that's partly why I assume that's why that they give free vaccines to people in all these large companies. I don't know, you know, assuming they think that that's actually going to improve productivity, when in fact I'm sure it doesn't, because people just will take those sick days anyway. But then there's all this kind of weird thing that goes on where companies try to restrict the way people can take sick days. And I had a friend who works for a company who insists that if they're sick on a Monday or a Friday, that they have to have a medical certificate, right? And she was in a situation where she actually had to she was sick, right? She had to go out and find a doctor to get a medical certificate. And she couldn't find a doctor because she went to all these government clinics and they were all full. She went to like 5 of them, right? And so she was driving around getting exhausted, trying to get a medical certificate so she could get her sick leave for the day she took off.
It's totally counterproductive because especially on the weekend, the clinics are closed and people end up flooding the ER. And people don't need, you know, if you have, let's say, the flu, you don't need to go see a doctor. So it's just putting more sick people out in contact with other people in a closed environment, like in a clinic. All it does is spread more disease and sucks up the resources of the medical system.
And of course, massively improves the profits of drug companies that manufacture the vaccines or the, you know, the cold and flu tablets and all this stuff that they market. you know, massive, massive profiteering there, just basically preying on us, preying on human beings in this totally, you know, outrageous way is what I find. I mean, it's been proven that I think there was an investigation that was done in Europe. The Council of Europe investigated some of the vaccine manufacturers, and they found that there was collusion between the World Health Organization and vaccine manufacturers. There was conflict of interest. And
all their top advisors on what they call SAGE, they're a vaccine advisory board, they all have ties to vaccine industry. And the WHO just changed the definition of a pandemic, so it no longer included severity of the disease and mortality, and it just had to do with spread. So it was just the same spread in two or more countries. There you go, you have a pandemic. Everybody needs vaccines. Well, it was a total scam. And yeah, it was Wolfgang Wodarg from the European Council.
Yeah.
And they led an investigation, and yeah, they showed that there was a lot of corruption there. But the flu shot really just doesn't work. And as for sick days, they say that a lot, take it so you won't miss work, but in practice it doesn't actually lead to people missing less work. It's only been shown to reduce absence from work by like a half to one day in total. So it really doesn't make a big difference. On the other hand, if you're injecting yourself with mercury and foreign animal proteins and you're damaging your nervous system and your immune system long term, you're more liable to end up missing a lot more work down the road if you're damaged like that. So what's worse, to miss an extra one day or a half a day because you decided to stay home and take some rest when you had the flu, or to then, you know, come down with some awful autoimmune disease or some other problem and then be a real drain on the system, you know, in the sense that you're going to need a lot more medical care and you'd take a lot more time off work. So it's not helping anybody to do this.
Totally, totally. Just going to take a really quick break here. I'll be right back. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, well, I'm here today on Truth News with Sonia from Montreal, Canada, and we're talking about vaccines. We started talking about the 9/11 truth movement. We moved on to vaccines. Sonia gets into a lot of topics that are highly, you know, controversial, I guess, and in a sense, very similar to what we talk about on this show. There's a lot in common with some of these topics in the way that we find that the media is conspiring to give people false information about it, and the average person has a completely misguided view of what the actual scientific facts are. And of course, quite often, whenever you bring up these topics with people who haven't been, you know, educated or woken up, you get a really hostile reaction, and they you know, they say, "How dare you?" You know, like the vaccine thing, Sonia. You probably get this a lot. I mean, I've been told I'm just the most terrible person for even talking about these vaccine questions, and I should just hang my head in shame and just, you know. Do you get that?
Silly. You know, I do. I don't really spend a lot of time talking to people on a one-to-one basis because I'm pretty busy, and I found that it's more efficient for me to do my research, compile the information into a blog or sometimes a blog post or a website post, and I can reach thousands of people like that.
Yeah.
Although a lot of them may already be, you know, it may be a question of preaching the converted, but I may reach 100 people that way who had no idea. Like last fall, I put up a post about H1N1 miscarriage risk.
Yeah.
Because I had done a lot of digging to find that, in fact, in studies, they showed that it caused not just miscarriages, but birth defects and developmental delays. The mice had delayed acquisition of neonatal reflexes. So they knew that, and still they put in the shots. And at the time, they said it had not been tested on pregnant women. Well, it had, but the studies were canceled, or the one study was canceled, because the women ran a fever, and they know that stimulating the immune system like that can be damaging to the baby. So they canceled the study, but they went ahead and recommended to give it to everybody. And they said no tests had been done on pregnant women. So, you know, there's a lot of deception going on there. So I did that vlog. And then now it has come out that the National Coalition of Organized Women, they've been doing some research into this, and they found that there's a lot of very strong evidence that the H1N1 was in fact related to a very steep increase in miscarriages. A lot of anecdotal reports had been circulating on the internet even last fall about women saying that they got the shot and they all miscarried about a week later. And there were actually a lot of stillbirths even very late. Remember, there were several reports coming out in Portugal of women losing their babies at about 34 weeks right after getting flu shots. And of course, officially, they always say, no, it wasn't related to it. But that's just because they're protecting the vaccine industry. They're not really trying to get to the bottom of it and do what's good for the public. But so the National Coalition of Organized Women did this study, which you can see the data on progressiveconvergence.com. And they found that it was related to a very steep increase in miscarriage. They said in 2007, 2008, there were 7 VAERS reports. And VAERS is the American Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System.
Right.
And it really only represents 1 to 10% of adverse events, because most of them, like the vast majority, don't go reported. But there were 7 in 2007, 2008, and in 2009, 2010, there were 178 VAERS and 70 other sources with 7 overlaps that came out to 241 reports of vaccine-related fetal demise.
Well, wow, so look, I'll have to get the links for that so I can put those up on our show notes, because that's really important.
You know what? I have all this on my blog, because we were talking about this today on our show as well. So if you go to thetruthergirls.wordpress.com, the most recent entry has a link to this study. And also my video from last year is embedded with the data that I had found. There's so much evidence that it was linked to fetal demise, and still they're going to tell pregnant women to go out and get vaccinated. That's just criminal. And recently, the case of Hannah Poling was finally settled. She's a 9-year-old girl who's autistic.
Okay.
She was a normal, healthy toddler, precocious even. She was about a year and a half old. She was given 5 shots containing 9 different vaccines on one day. She went autistic right after that, and it was found that the vaccines they wouldn't say it caused it, but they say that it led to her becoming autistic. It's just doublethink, because she had an underlying mitochondrial disorder that no one knew about, and so these vaccines were enough to be the environmental trigger. See, they all know that. They say that it's a genetic epidemic, but that's impossible. But the scientists actually know that the genetics are there, but they require an environmental trigger.
Yeah.
And if you have an underlying mitochondrial disorder and you don't know it, and it's not even that rare, maybe as many as 1 in 50 kids who have it, then it could be a vaccine or something else that triggers this. But why expose all these children to the vaccine, and then you have the ones who are susceptible who are going to be damaged like that? Well, Hannah Poling's, the Polings won their case, and she was awarded over $1.5 million. But the court records were then sealed. See, they always want to hide it. But the thing is, people are waking up, because so many people know someone who is vaccine damaged, or their kid was vaccine damaged, or they've seen it for themselves, or they just see that the information just doesn't add up. I mean, you go on the internet and you have all this raw data, and you have all this stuff that it's very open. There's a lot of transparency. And then you have the media just saying everything's fine. So people just don't buy it anymore. And it's like the more they push the propaganda, the more suspicious people get. Because they say, wait a minute. Well, look, Hannah Poling, she just got awarded $1.5 million. Why is the record being sealed? All these women had miscarriages. Why are we being told that it's good for pregnant women? You know, people aren't as stupid as the government and the media would like to believe that they are. They're just not.
And what I'm finding is that
they're waking up.
Indeed. And you know what I'm finding more and more is that the because the people are waking up, they're actually using much more bully boy tactics with the government and the mainstream media to to try and massage opinion back in the right direction, you know, from their point of view. And what we're seeing in Australia is just massive public statements from the government that you know, everyone should take their swine flu vaccine, everything's fine. And we've also had an attack on one of the major vaccination awareness groups. It's called the Australian Vaccination Network, which has been operating here for a long time, probably, you know, at least 10, maybe probably 20 years. And it's got a very large following in Australia. And there was this kind of bogus investigation that was done on them by a government department that then you know, this went on the news. Like, it was actually on the evening news. I mean, it, you know, it's a really, by all normal standards, not that important a story, because, you know, so what? Okay, this lady who runs a website, who has this group, has an opinion about vaccines, but they decided to make it like a medical investigation, and they said she was actually disseminating false medical advice and that she should be compelled to put disclaimers on her website saying that, that, you know, this is not medical advice and that she is an anti-vaccine lobbyist. And, of course, you know, she said, well, I'm just a free citizen. It's my website. I can put on there whatever I want. But they're trying to turn it into a public health and safety issue. And this is really, really chilling, Sonia, because it starts to merge in with issues about censorship generally. Because if it's a thin end of the wedge, if it was to be accepted that the government could compel someone to put on their website some information, where would it ever end? You know, anything that you did as a private citizen on a web page could be considered to be disturbing in some ways. I mean, the stuff we put on Truth News, you know, we question 9/11. We also question vaccines. We question climate change. And there's plenty of people who've actually said that questioning climate change should be considered some form of crime too. Because, you know, it's like a threat to the future of the planet if we have these right. terrible deniers walking around, you know. And, of course, the terminology of denier is widely used now across multiple completely distinct areas of activism, you know. So if you're an anti-vaccine campaigner, you're a vaccine denier. If you're a 9/11 truth campaigner, you're a 9/11 denier. If you're concerned about if you're a climate skeptic, you're a climate denier. And, you know, and this is propaganda. This is a mind control method. This is basically just using that word. And, of course, it all goes back to the Holocaust, which was the original where the word denier really kind of picked up, was it the people who questioned the Holocaust. And, of course, you know, we do actually have people who get thrown in prison for making, even questioning the Holocaust in any way. And, you know, although I accept that the Holocaust occurred, I still think that people who ask questions or who want to write a book, if they're a professor or something, to the fact that it's been accepted that is already criminalized now in certain countries, we've really gone a long way in accepting these inroads on what is accepted freedom. And, you know, we're talking here about issues about science, but, you know, it swings back around. We're really talking about issues of freedom, aren't we?
Yeah, well, we are. And, you know, speaking of the disclaimers, a lot of people put those on their websites as it is. But I don't think the disclaimers, even if the government wants you to put disclaimers, I don't think it really would make very much difference, because at this point, the awakening is spreading so fast. And everybody knows that the disclaimers really only say, disclaimer, this is alternate information. It's not government-sanctioned propaganda. That's all that the disclaimer means. It means the government has not given their stamp of approval, which we already know. We know that you go to this website and you're going to get some other side of the story. So, you know, I have disclaimers on my website and say, you know, this is not to be construed as medical advice. Go see your doctor before making decisions about vaccination. But I feel like adding a little more to that sentence. But keep in mind that your doctor, you know, is basically a shill for the pharmaceutical industry and is forced by law to recommend all their products and probably doesn't know the truth about them himself or herself. But I wouldn't bother even adding that, because everybody already knows that at this point.
Yeah.
You know, even my dentist didn't vaccinate her kids. My neighbor down the hall finally woke up after her son was so badly damaged that he's globally developmentally delayed and he's like flapping his hands and he's not walking or talking or pointing or, you know, gesturing at 19 months. And I had tried to warn her, but, you know, kind of very gently.
Yeah.
And she didn't listen to me. But, I mean, he was already damaged before that. I think it was from the hepatitis shots he had in Iran. He had three very quickly, like one after the other, very early, full of mercury. And, you know, I tried to warn her a bit about the vaccines. And she didn't want to look into it more. That's her choice. But when he got another round, he got really sick. And I felt like, you know, maybe I should mention it to her again. And then she ended up showing me the vaccine booklet, and I ended up showing her some scientific studies. Hey, they're in PubMed, you know?
Yeah.
That's official stuff there. And it talks about how it caused developmental delays in monkeys with a single shot of mercury-containing hepatitis B vaccine. That's enough for her to know that there's more to the story. And, you know, what else do they want to give him? They want to give him some flu shots or something with more mercury? Well, she can make a decision either way, whether she wants to give him more vaccines or not. But if she has more information and she understands how toxic mercury really is and how relatively harmless the flu is and how so far ineffective the vaccine has shown itself to be, she may probably make the decision not to give him any more vaccines. And that's what she ended up doing, even though the doctor took a fit. But, you know, people can see through the lies. And if the government wants to say you can't put anything up unless it has our stamp of approval, well, that just makes it look worse for them, because it just looks like, well, what are they hiding? You know what I mean? The disclaimer doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah, it's not gonna work in the end. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Exactly. Like, we already know the bogus explanation of 9/11. So yeah, you're gonna have 1,200 nearly architects and engineers on AE 9/11 Truth telling you scientific facts and you know, inconsistencies in the official story, and they are supposed to put a disclaimer. Disclaimer: this is not what the government wants you to believe, so keep that in mind. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Nobody's going to listen to it. Everybody knows it's just there for, you know, for their own protection, so they don't get sued.
It's pretty ridiculous. Look, I just wanted at this point to introduce. I've got a third guest in the studio today, Lawrence. Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Hi, Herwood. Good to be here.
Lawrence is actually going to play a song. This is something we're experimenting with on the show here. I haven't done this before, but Lawrence is going to play a song right now. He's got his guitar. And are you good to stand by while we do that, Sonia?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Okay. We'll just stay on the line and we'll get that moving right now.
This land is mine, and God gave this land to me. This great and ancient land to me. But when the morning sun reveals the hills and the plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong. Just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong to make this land our own. If I must fight, I'll fight to make this land our own. Until I die, this land is mine.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, welcome back to the show. Thank you, Lawrence.
Thank you, Herwood. Thank you, Sonia. That was bit of fun. And I was a bit unprepared there, but it was a good blast anyway.
Yeah, look, it's something that I kind of would like to start doing regularly to get music happening, keep it live, keep the spontaneity happening. Sonia, let's talk a little bit about your show and what you do, because like you've got a show that goes like 3 days a week, is that right?
Yeah, it's on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Yeah. And Karen and I, my co-host, we do a show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the show can be, is our, you can either listen to it live at that time, or if you miss it, or you know, you're in a different time zone or whatever, you can download the archive version. And we have a guest on for the first hour,
yeah,
and then we talk about current events and whatever else the second hour.
Sure.
A lot of the time it's me doing the first hour with the guest, and then Karen joins me in the second. And we've had people like Alan Phillips, who's a vaccine rights attorney, like he specializes in vaccine waiver and exemption law.
Okay.
We've had a chiropractor on. We've had authors of various books. Lately, we had Russ Dizdar on. He wrote a book called The Black Awakening, The Rise of the Satanic Super Soldier. We had Pastor Manning on tonight talking about Obama and the fraud that is, that he's not a natural born citizen. So we have a lot of different people, and we don't talk about economics very much, but
yeah,
we talk about sort of the spiritual aspect, the shift in consciousness that's occurring in the New World Order. We talk about the vaccines, and we talk about the police state. We like to keep tabs on what they're up to. And
sure,
we talk also about, sometimes we have guests talking about food and health, things like that. We had a raw food specialist on the other day. So all kinds of different stuff. And we never lose our sense of humor.
Great. Yeah, you've done some really great comedy on your YouTube channel there.
That's my creative outlet,
Yeah.
I used to do like theater and all kinds of performance, and I just like doing that. So
I think The Truth of Cooking is great.
Yeah,
because like, people do need to have like different, people who are interested in conspiracy theories and stuff, right, often tend to just always look at that stuff. But if you can sort of offer something to do with cooking, like natural health, stuff like that, to those same people, I think it's really good, because it's great, and we need to cook, we need to take care of ourselves really well, so it's actually,
yeah,
it's
really
funny, but it's good too. Yeah.
Yeah, the food is actually really fundamental. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine today who's a chiropractor, and he's pointing out that when you're so polluted with all these chemicals, the pharmaceutical drugs and the denatured food and all the additives and the vaccines, it's like your body's vibrations are lowered and your consciousness is lowered, and you're maybe more susceptible to brainwashing. I mean, you really can't be, how can I put it, you're in a lowered state of consciousness because of those poisons that you're taking in all the time, and you're, especially your nutrition, and you're more susceptible. But when you start to clean yourself out, like as in refusing the pharmaceuticals and using herbs or vitamin D to boost your immunity, or homeopathics if you get sick, things like that, and you try to eat at least whole food. It may not always be organic, but at least, I mean, it really makes a big difference to your overall well-being anyway, even if you live in the city, or you go drinking on the weekend, or you smoke cigarettes or something like that.
Sure.
But it makes such a big difference. And also, it seems like people who do that are less susceptible to brainwashing. We're starting to wonder. But these are practical things that you can do, like boycotting their tainted foods and their vaccines and their pharmaceuticals. But the other thing that we've been looking into a lot lately is the idea of your own personal sovereignty, like,
yeah,
letting go of your fear, because the New World Order relies on our fear. The fear is what drives it, whether it's fear of the flu that makes you take the flu shot, or whether it's fear of what the New World Order is going to do to you next.
Yeah, there's a YouTube that you put up a few days ago that I actually posted on the Truth News Facebook page, and you're talking there about fear. And I thought it was really interesting. I would like to get into that a bit, because you're actually talking about how what we really have to do, even when we've realized there's a lot of bad stuff happening, we have to not react with fear, because that is actually not going to lead us out of the situation. And in some ways, it may even be, I think, maybe this is just me saying this, but I think possibly that the fear reaction is almost what they want. Because if you see all this terrible stuff and you see all these lies and it seems like this colossal conspiracy of lies, and you think I'm powerless, it's hopeless, and you contract into this little ball of fear, then you won't do anything. You won't take any actions. And I have this problem all the time with people who are exactly in that state. They know that there's something very wrong going on, but they won't do anything. And it seems that fear is the reason why they won't do anything, but it's also self-perpetuating belief that they feel that there's no point in doing anything.
Well, yeah, I really do think that fear drives people. It also drives people sometimes to be rebellious, but when you're rebelling, you're still attributing authority to whoever you're rebelling against. So we're not talking about rebellion. I mean, waking people up by disseminating information, I think, is very valuable, because the more important thing in the bigger picture is the spiritual awakening and the awakening of consciousness that people experience as a result of realizing that all the beliefs that they've had, largely, nearly all of them, all the official beliefs that they've been fed are lies. It's all a lie.
Sure.
Our everything, our whole construct regarding who we are, our identities, what life is about, it's all based on lies. So people wake up and they start to realize that it actually frees you up, and it frees you up to be really yourself. So that can be really a wonderful thing. And two, let's say you have a child and you tell him, if you don't eat your vegetables to make mommy happy, child won't eat his vegetables. If you don't eat vegetables, you don't get your dessert. If you don't eat your vegetables, I'm going to put you in the timeout. If you don't eat your vegetables, I'm going to spank you. But if the child has no fear, there is nothing you can do.
Hello? Hello? I think we've lost Sonia. Sonia, are you there? You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, we've got Sonia back on the line. Looks like we had a bit of a glitch there. Anyway, Sonia, you were in the middle of describing, I can't remember now.
The effect of fear.
I wanted to say that
fear is really what fuels the New World Order. I'm not sure where I got cut off, but the thing is, let's say, how can I explain this? You got to start looking at things in a different way and to lose your fear. Because, like, for example, if you're working and they say you have to take a flu shot or you're going to lose your job, well, your fear of losing your job is going to drive you to take that flu shot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or it could be anything else. But
fear of losing your mortgage, fear of losing your job, not being able to pay your mortgage, losing your house. That's another classic one.
Right, because you think that if you lose your job, A is going to happen, B is going to happen, C is going to happen, D is going to happen. You've got it all lined up about what the terrible things are that are going to happen if A happens. If you lose your job, all these other things are going to result from it. But you need to lose that fear and just trust. I mean, this is a spiritual thing. Trust that, let them make you lose your job, and you deal with that when that happens. And actually, if anybody out there is listening, if you can think of something that you would have considered a really terrible thing that happened in your life, but actually good will come out of it.
Yeah.
And it just depends on what you're defining as good. I mean, let's say, you lose somebody who's very dear to you, but through that death, how can I explain it? I can use a personal example. Okay, my father died last September. But rather than latching on to his death as some terrible loss that I had suffered, I told him, it's your time to go. You can go and be with God, And of course, I miss him. But what ended up happening was that through his death, I was just able to grow more as a soul. And actually, as a result, the same happened with my mother, and our relationship got a lot closer. So even though his death was bad in some sense, because my mother loses the security of having her husband, and I don't have my father around anymore, but we evolved with it, and something else good came out of it. You know, whatever terrible thing that happened to you at some point, if you learn to use that, like I was going to say that the Bible even says that God can use even adverse circumstances for good. So you just need to have faith to get through this thing. Whatever it is, you can let go of your fear. Whatever it is that's going to come to you, even up until death, you don't have anything to fear. But that doesn't mean, you know, you're going to go and be reckless and stuff like that. But if you're put in a situation where you can obey your conscience or obey your fear, you're best to go with obeying your conscience. Because, you know, you'll be equipped to deal with whatever comes as a result of that. Otherwise, you're denying yourself and you're lying to yourself. You're suppressing yourself, like as a human soul. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, look, there's different types of fear too. It's like at some level, fear is a natural instinctive thing which we need to have so that we don't stick a hand in a fire or, you know, don't jump off a cliff. You know, we've got certain things we're instinctively afraid of. People are instinctively afraid of heights. You know,
you just act on that. If you know you're going to get burnt if you stick your hand in that fire, you just don't stick your hand in there. You don't sit around all day thinking about what if I had stuck my hand in the fire.
Exactly.
You know, you just don't do that particular thing, but you're obeying your conscience. You know not to stick your hand in the fire. Now, if you know that the vaccine is dangerous and that goes against your conscience, but your fear is that you will lose your job, obey your conscience and don't take that vaccine.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Because there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the conscience is... It is kind of a higher level function, and I think it's interesting, you know, to compare, say, a human being to an animal, because it's very hard. I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about torture, because torture is actually uses fear to compel people to do things and say things, right? But it's virtually impossible to torture an animal, because they don't have what we have, is this apprehension, like to know the future, to see the future. So, you know, it doesn't really make any sense to torture a dog into, you know, doing something. You know what I mean? I mean, there's conditioning, behavioral conditioning. That's different too.
But there's no point in doing it. It won't work, right?
Yeah, and it's partly
just freak him out.
It's yeah, exactly. You know, you can freak an animal out by you know. I mean, there are things you can get a human being to do that you would never get an animal to do. You know, you could force a human being to eat excrement. You know what I mean? Whereas you won't get an animal to do that, no matter what you say to them. You know, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to gouge your eyes out unless you eat that, you know, dog turd. Well, an animal just won't do it because they instinctively know that that's not a good thing to eat. They won't eat it. But a human being, because they can be actually, they've got this capacity to think about the future, and we do have this higher sense of, you know, of consciousness. That then becomes this type of fear that is very it has really positive things when it's not about fear and control, but it has very negative things when it does become about fear and control.
I think I'm talking more about fear as an intimidation. You know,
yeah.
There's a natural self-preserving kind of fear, as in you don't stick your hand on the stove or you don't jump out the window.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about that. That's why I said I'm not talking about being reckless and doing stupid things, but I'm talking about not giving into the fear from intimidation to go against what your soul is telling you to do. Because if you do that, you will regret it. You will suffer from what you've done. Well, then again, you can also take that and turn it out into something else that's wonderful if you can learn from your experience. But whatever comes to you, you need to learn from it and you need to evolve from it. And then you can just be even more wonderful as a result of that. And you know what? I say these things and people might be like, yeah, what do you know? You've never been through this and that. But I actually have. Like, I've had a lot of experience in my life that maybe some people would consider really horrible. And some people might have been traumatized by them and carry that burden with them for the rest of their life. But on the other hand, I can look at that and consider these supposedly traumatic experiences as a gift, because I was able to become a totally different person because of that and evolve. And, you know, if it hadn't been for some of those things that you know, you could say, well, this is terrible because this happened, and so XYZ would have happened if this hadn't happened. But because that happened, I'm who I am now. I have the husband who I have now, and I have the mind and the soul that I have now. For example, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a philosophical, spiritual argument that you're proposing there. And actually, when I posted your video there about it on my Facebook page, I got a couple of quite, you know how a lot of people are who are kind of conspiracy theorists or whatever. They see a lot of things as being sinister, and there's a lot of hostility towards kind of New Age thinking among many of the people that listen to this show and you know, follow some of the things that are going on about the truth movement. But then, you know, that we've got like the Zeitgeist movement, which is a kind of this other thing that's going on, which appears to have a lot of people who are exploring, you know, ideas, spiritual ideas or whatever. But there's a lot of hostility and suspicion, because some people think that anything that had smacks of New Age, and I use that term just in a very loose, you know, sloppy way, is somehow, you know, tainted by a secret plan to control us through an atheistic new world order where we kind of worship Gaia.
Well, I think it is, though, in some ways. The New Age religion has been used in that way. But I'm not talking about New Age stuff. I mean, I'm personally Christian.
Okay.
It's just I don't like to use religious terminology. But you could say that whatever experience you receive in your life, God can help you to, you know, grow from that experience and to grow spiritually, and that when you come into a conflict with, we call it your conscience or the Holy Spirit that's inside you, you need to listen to the Holy Spirit and not listen to the fear that doctor's trying to put into you, telling you need to take this flu shot. Because if you lose your job because you obeyed the Holy Spirit, God will then, through the Holy Spirit, guide you on your path, and everything is going to be okay. It's not maybe going to be the way that you thought it would be, but it will be okay, and it will be wonderful in its own way. Do you know what I'm saying? You need
Yes.
to detach from the material and from your ideas of what is good in sense of how your life should be. And this is what's more important, is the spiritual path that you're following. I just don't always like to use religious terminology, because people, oh, you're Christian, and you think the Bible and blah, blah, and it was written by the Illuminati. But it's just a question of vocabulary, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I hope that everyone listening can appreciate that as well, because some people have like react to trigger words, and if they think that you're preaching religion, then they'll turn off. And
yeah.
I'm always hoping to reach I think we can reach as many people as possible, and I think that that there doesn't have to be a divide between people who say I'm agnostic or even an atheist or Christian. There are a lot of things that we can understand, but the language often does separate people. And of course, a lot of people are quite aggressively atheistic, and that can sometimes be a bit of a barrier to understanding the meanings. And it's a struggle, though. You know, it's something we really need to work on, because I really like to pull more people together. And what I've found is that some of these movements, and you know, I'll say this about the Zeitgeist movement, because I'm quite critical of it, is that the Zeitgeist movie adopted a very negative attitude towards religion per se as part of the message of that movie. And by in doing so, it brought a lot of people to follow that group, but then it alienated heaps of other people. And it creates this problem. That almost seems like a deliberate kind of dirty tricks thing going on there to divide and conquer. And a lot of people have suspected that, but then I know a lot of people who are into the Zeitgeist who are very genuine as well. I'm just saying, you know, be aware of it, and let's try not to promote ideas that are going to be divisive.
You know what, the thing is, you can please some of the people some of the time, you can't please all people all the time. And no matter what I put up on the internet, guaranteed, every video that I put up, somebody finds it offensive, no matter what I say.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've given up on that kind of thing. I'm certainly not preaching any kind of religion or any kind of divisiveness. But I think that we can all agree that what happens in your life and what you fear, a lot of it has to do with your perspective on it and what you do with that situation. You know, and how you use that down the road. And the bigger thing in the picture is people can call it a shift in consciousness or an awakening or a spiritual awakening or whatever it is. But look, if before I was awake, I was just preoccupied with trying to fit into molds and wear different hats and follow the prescribed path and measuring myself in relation to how well I had succeeded with one or another of these things, and really not even knowing who I was anymore, and I wasn't listening to myself inside. So as a result of waking up, people are much freer to even really be who they are. You know
indeed.
What I mean?
Yeah, no, that's
so
great.
That's one thing that comes out of it, and we have a great sense of community in the truth movement. Although we have different views, I'm personally not into religion. I think it's totally corrupted and
right.
infiltrated.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not into religion. And another thing is, if I refer to the Bible, I'm not referring to the religion of Christianity, but just as an example, like as a quote or whatever, that says like the Holy Spirit or whatever you want to call it, can give you a spirit of discernment. So you as individuals need to use your individual discernment. So because, you know, John says A and Tim says B and Max makes a good case for C, but you need to listen to it and think about it and then follow what's right in your heart. So maybe somebody else doesn't have the answers for you. But some people like the zeitgeist and some people are atheists and some people are Christian. But it doesn't really matter what groups we put ourselves into. You can listen to everything. It's the same as when you take information on vaccines. You can hear it all and then come to your own conclusions. And so that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great to have the dialogue. And it's good mm-hmm. to have the contrary opinions. And one of the things that I've always found most frustrating with being a truther is that the people who represent the official positions usually don't even want to debate. They refuse to debate. And they say, I'm not going to dignify this, subject with debate. So in other words, they don't acknowledge a discussion. They just say, I'm right and you're wrong. And that is exactly what we don't need. I mean, you've got to have the ability to ask a question, even if it seems like a dumb question. You know what I mean? And, I've always been open to even the dumb questions to consider them. And there are some themes within the truth movement that I'm not totally on board with. For example, chemtrails is one of them. And I know that you talk a bit about this on your show, but I'm yet to be convinced of the chemtrail phenomenon, but I'm open to it. It's just that I don't feel that there's been enough evidence presented for me to know what's going on there. We could do a whole show on that one because we've actually done two shows on chemtrails it tends to, and I've been criticized a lot for this, for having this position, but basically it's also me saying, look, get serious with your research, because you can't just have an idea and then have people embrace that because you had an idea. I mean, you look at the 9/11 truth movement, look at the detailed work that they did there to get the dust samples and do the electron microscopy and, to find stuff that's actually forensic. Exactly the same with vaccines and the reason...
Well, there is evidence like that with the chemtrails too. I mean, from water samples and from a lot of different things.
Well, I'm very keen to know about that.
As well, with their patented crops that are resistant to aluminum, and the European Council has asked the European Commission for disclosure on airplane trails that no longer contain only water, and they want to know how is this going to affect everything from human health to TV reception. So there's a lot of stuff out there, plus all the documents from people who are in the science of geoengineering themselves.
Can you provide some links to some good stuff there? I would just really love to get some better quality stuff because honestly, I've tried really hard to investigate the chemtrails phenomenon, and I just end up getting so confused. Right. And I've had John Bursell, aircraft engineer, come on the show, who is quite convinced that it's quite plausible that they are just, it's water condensation. Right. That occurs due to temperature and humidity conditions, which vary, and small changes in those can suddenly cause water condensation. So, but I'm interested in it, and I'd like to do. I probably really need to do a whole nother show on chemtrails.
Yeah.
Maybe get you on board at that point because we've kind of run out of time today.
Yeah, that's something I get into a lot now because one of those things that, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, yes, they're definitely engaging some kind of geoengineering, but. You know, they're pushing, some people are really pushing for disclosure. And maybe they will disclose eventually what the purpose is for this, but it's not something that I can do anything about immediately in my own life. So I prefer to focus on things that people can take immediate action on, you know, like vaccines or their food or whatever, or even just recognize their own sovereignty as human living souls and needing to not submit to fear because of intimidation and just being true to yourself. Those are things that I prefer to focus on more. So I don't go into the chemtrails a lot.
Great. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, yeah, things that you can actually focus on. You know, I'd like to basically get into any subject that we can also provide kind of empirical scientific information on, and the vaccines are certainly one of those. And, you know, I've talked a lot about the work of Dr. Andrew Wakefield on this show, and, you know, there's just so much clear research there that that provides quality, you know, quality scientific information, and always just constantly looking at new horizons, though. And you know, but I look, thanks so much for coming on today. I think we're just about run out of time, but
thanks for having me.
Yeah, and so thetruthofgirls.com.
That's the website, and on the front page, you'll find the links to everything else. Like our YouTube is The Truth of Girls. It's actually thetruthofgirls.com. And same for the YouTube and WordPress. It's always The Truth of Girls.
Great. So strongly recommend your show. It's really interesting. And great talking to you today, Sonia.
Likewise. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Cheers.
Okay, bye.
Take care. Well, that'll be our show for tonight. Hope you enjoyed it. It got into some interesting areas there. Probably some issues there that people don't totally agree with. If that's the case, please contact us and leave a note on the show or join our Facebook discussion page, and be very pleased to know what you thought. Cheers from Truth News Radio Australia.